When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Hey, it's me, Jersey, and it's time for your Thunder Punch Daily, the show I record not so daily, sharing a few thoughts from the mind of a cartoonist back in the studio. A rare opportunity before I rush off to class to jot down a quick Thunder Punch Daily for you guys. And what am I thinking about today? Well, the art of the conversation. And no, I'm not talking about podcasting or audio conversations. I'm talking about comics conversations. This has been on my mind a little bit lately in my classrooms because I'm just started up a new series, an 8-week series at the Ann Arbor Art Center called Graphic Novel Academy. I do this every couple months, this series of workshops. Well, class, I guess is what it is. And in response to the fact that my students are really terrific at doing action scenes and character design and coming up with fun, punchy stories, I did notice a couple things that were lacking in their work. And the two main things were variety of moment choice, which I'll explain in a moment, and word balloon placement. These are two things that a lot of beginning cartoonists have a hard time with, and even a seasoned veterans of comics can screw up from time to time. I am guilty of this myself. And how can you teach that? How can you learn that? How can you practice this technique? So I came up with a quick little lesson in my classroom where I had the students draw a conversation sequence, because I think drawing two or more characters talking about something is a wonderful opportunity for you to play with moment choice and word balloon placement, especially. And also, it is a deceptively boring sequence to draw. Two people talking, three people talking. That's no fun. We want to draw the things smashing into things, right? We want to focus on our beautiful, our ability to draw, to beautifully render anatomy and pose and gesture. But get this, in a conversation sequence, this is a dynamite opportunity to do that. And what's more is conversation sequences in a lot of comics can be unnecessarily boring because the cartoonist isn't thinking about moment choice and what the scene is about when they're drawing two people talking. They'll just draw two talking heads. You know, they'll show a close-up of one head, then the two characters sitting across the table from a straight-on shot, and then show another person's close-up of another person's face, maybe close-up on their eye or something. This is something Keith Giffen did a lot. He'd do the big eye panel when he had them talking. And unfortunately, talking sequences happen. Well, maybe I shouldn't say unfortunately. I should say for better or worse. Talking scenes happen in comics. You need some expositional scenes. You need moments where we get to hear what the characters are thinking through their own words. And not all of us are doing action-adventure, vibrant, youthful, youth-oriented storytelling. Some of us want to do something a little bit more sophisticated and layered. Some of us may want to do a comics type of, or a Wuthering Heights type of comic, right? Or a Virginia Woolf, if you want to get really whacked out and weird about your storytelling. I don't know if any of you have read Virginia Woolf, but I found her stuff impenetrable. But I think that's probably because I was reading it from the mindset of an 8-year-old boy. But anyway, so let me break it down. A conversation sequence. I'm going to put the image file in the show notes for this episode. It'll be in the post that you're probably looking at as you listen to this, or is up on your browser window as you're listening to this. Of a conversation sequence that, or conversation of between two people having coffee. And you can use that as a basis for this if you want to. But what are the things that you should be thinking about when drawing a conversation sequence to practice this? Well, let's talk about moment choice for a second here. Now, moment choice means what are you going to show in the panels while the dialogue is going on? And there's a lot of considerations in there. And I broke it down to three big ones to really consider is one, scenery. Where is this story taking place? Where is this conversation taking place? Is it two people in a cafe in Paris? Is it two people at home having coffee? Is it two demons in the bowels of hell having coffee? Is it two monsters on an alien world having coffee? That doesn't matter to me in this exercise. It just matters that you have two characters having coffee saying these words. But you have scenery opportunities there. If you're in a sidewalk cafe in Paris, What are the things that are worth looking at while these two people are talking besides the people? Is there going to be a cyclist going by in the background? Is there going to be different kinds of cars passing by? What kind of birds are going to be in this area? What kinds of sounds might we be hearing outside of the dialogue itself? I mean, watch a conversation scene in a movie and see what they show you and what they don't show you in that sequence. You know, crowds passing by, the reflection of the characters in a window across the way so we can see something else that's going on. And not being arbitrary about this, although you can be, but be deliberate in giving us a sense of the place, showing a variety of the aspects of the scene, and from different angles too, depending. And that leads me to my next one, when we talk about angles, emotional context. What is this conversation about? What are the emotions of these characters during this sequence? Are they frustrated as they talk about these things? Are they being bemused when they talk about these things? The conversation that that will be in the image file that you'll see, I intentionally designed it so that it could have a variety of emotional interpretations, right? You can say, oh, heck no. In a lot of different ways. You can be furious when you say it. You can be laughing when you say it. You could be really sad when you say it. You know, what is the emotional context? And how can you show that through gesture, through using their hands, using their body language, using their facial expressions? Also from viewing angle. If you want to show somebody feeling very powerless and small, you might want to look down on them. If you want them to look powerful and defiant, you might want to look up at them. If it's a scene to show how insignificant they feel, maybe you want to pull back and show them from far away, the character who's doing the speaking. If you want them to look intimidating and menacing or very emotionally intense, you might want to get very close to them. So not only do we have to consider what scenery we want to look at, And what is the physical relationships, the spatial relationships between the characters and their environment, but also what is the emotional subtext of that scene? How can we really deliver how these characters feel, not just through the dialogue, but how we choose to show these people? This is show, not tell, is what it, in a nutshell in comics. And sometimes you do have to tell, not show. That's just the way it goes. There's a balance between the two, and the dialogue should be carrying some of that weight. But there's also an opportunity to show some of that stuff through the visual choices that you make. So then there's acting moments again. I want to focus on that just another second. I mean, hands are so important in a conversation sequence. How is the person holding the coffee? Are they gripping it tightly? Are they gingerly caressing caressing? What am I trying to think? What's another word for that? Are they just gently holding the handle of the coffee cup? Are they holding it with both hands? Do they cross their legs when they sit? Do they slouch when they sit? Is it a relaxed posture where the person has one arm kind of drooped over the back of the chair and the other hand just thoughtlessly tapping away at the table or monkeying with fiddling with the spoon on the table? Are they making eye contact with the person across from them at the table? Are they looking away? Are they being distracted by something else in the environment? All these things are little visual cues to tell us how these characters feel, right? So there's a zillion choices in doing a conversation sequence, which is a great exercise for learning how to be a little bit more mindful of showing different aspects of a scene and focusing on not just what is vitally important to the scene, but also some of that subtext, some of that outside coloring that helps, give you a more distinct storytelling voice. Now, when you look at How to Draw Comics the Marvel Way by Stan Lee and John Buscema, and I've said repeatedly that it's a bit of a propaganda book. It really extols the virtues of the Marvel style of storytelling, and it is called the Marvel Way after all. I mean, it's the disclaimer's right there in the title. And Stanley talks about doing a dynamic sequence. You should be constantly changing the viewing angle in the storytelling. And in the examples that he shows, yes, indeed, those are very dynamic sequences when you see John Buscema's take on what was originally a much more objective or... I guess objective is the best word for it, right? Documentarian kind of storytelling style where the viewing angle or camera, in quotes, is always placed on a tripod at about shoulders height to all of the characters, right? But if you change the viewing angle constantly, then it feels like you're always off balance and it seems very exciting. And but that's the Marvel way, yes. But you can take that and extrapolate that philosophy in a more subtle way to look at various aspects of the scene. Like, so if you have like two young people pitching Wu sitting on a bench, and they're having that horrible teenage conversation that we've all been present for, which where you say, "Oh, what kind of girls do you like? Oh, I don't know. What kind of boys do you like? Hee hee hee." What are you going to show there? You're going to show the two people sitting, and then maybe you'll show their hands like resting on the park bench, like just within an inch of each other. You know, maybe show what the boy sees when he looks at the girl. Like, what's he focusing on? Oh, this way the sunlight hits her hair as a little bit of a wind kicks up and moves her hair around or something. What's she looking at? Oh, she's looking at like that little pinch of his lower eyelid when he smiles or something like that. Focus on those things. Look at the way the characters interpret the scene. What are the characters looking at, and how can we give this a little bit more emotional context through the moment choices that we show? Now, here's a big one for doing a conversation scene that I think is really useful, is thinking about your word balloon placement. Young cartoonists, my students, this is one that I have to work with a lot with them, is understanding that yes, when you look at a comic observes the rules of art and literature simultaneously. And that's what makes them, one of the reasons that they're so awesome, that I love them so much, is that we can defy traditional reading directions. We can have the sequence of events kind of follow an S pattern on the page. There's an example. I did a YouTube video. It's at youtube.com/comicsaregreat. The video is called Comics Are Great. And in it, I showed an example of a page from the Switch Runners comic I did with Mark, where in figuring out how to do word balloon placement on the sequence that Mark laid out, I found a non-traditional reading flow on the page. And it was a lot of work, and it was very tricky, and I'm very proud of that page as a result of it. But there are some general rules of thumb that should be observed, because you can easily mess this up, and you can make word balloon placements that are very confusing, very difficult to understand and read. And if you make your audience stop and go, hey, where am I supposed to go next? You've taken them out of the story. You know, when you do it right, the reading experience is seamless, and readers will find themselves zigzagging back and forth between panels without losing the sense of being involved in the story. And that's another reason that I think comics are so awesome, but is also a dangerous thing to play with. So as a general rule of thumb, when placing word balloons, a thing to remember is that in the West, at least, talking about American, North American, Western comics, not Japanese, we tend to read left to right, top to bottom. Now, this doesn't mean that you have to scan your word balloons like text in a book, where word balloon one is on the far left, word balloon two is in the middle, word balloon three is on the far right, and you just don't put anything on the bottom because that would be too confusing. No, but imagine sort of an S pattern within each word, each panel. Or even better yet, to keep it more simple, imagine a diagonal arrow going from the upper left corner of the panel to the bottom right corner of the panel, and the word balloon should follow along that arrow somehow. You shouldn't have word balloon one in the upper left, word balloon two in the bottom left, and word balloon three in the upper right. That's just confusing. People are going to start at the top, and they're going to work their way towards the bottom. And so you have to make sure that you're, when you place your word balloons, and this is why I do my word balloons at the thumbnailing level, because I can test them on people. I can show the thumbnail to somebody before I actually draw the page. Does this read right? Are you reading these word balloons in the proper order? And if they get confused, then I can think about rearranging them without having to worry about redrawing the panel in order to fit the word balloons in a new configuration, right? So as a general rule of thumb, think about that diagonal arrow running through each and every panel. And don't put, don't stack your word balloons where I see this happen a lot with beginning creators, at least. I'm not accusing anybody who's listening to this of this particular situation. But you'll have a word balloon one in the upper left, word balloon two in the upper right, word balloon three right underneath word balloon one, and word balloon four right underneath word balloon two. That can get confusing too, because you might want to read word balloons one and three before you get to word balloon two. It's a kind of a hard picture that I'm painting. It's hard to imagine what I'm describing here, but just try to remember that diagonal flow through each panel. There are some other rules of thumb, which I've talked about before in word balloon discussions, is try not to put your word balloons between your characters. Like, don't put them in between the line of vision between your characters. This is a technique I picked up from some tutorials on the comicbookfonts.com website, which I'll link to in the show notes. They had some really neat tips on lettering in Adobe Illustrator, but also some philosophical tips of try not to do this, try not to do that, because these things can be confusing for the reader. It can interrupt the flow of the storytelling, and putting your word balloon between your characters, which is something I've done in the past, and I've even done it recently as a matter of desperation. There was no place else to put the word balloon, so I was stuck with it. But as a general rule, I try to avoid doing that just because it interrupts the kind of the flow of the storytelling. The word balloons are supposed to be interpreted as being invisible. And if you have them interrupt visual flows of character movement within the panels, then it can kind of make the reader more aware of them than they need to be, if that makes any sense. So anyway, there's a little exercise to try out. If you got a few seconds, you want to sketch something a little bit and practice this technique of moment choice, word balloon placement, acting, and emotional context. Hope it's useful for you guys. And yeah, that's all I got for today. So who am I? I'm Jersey Droz, jdroz.com, Jersey on the Twitters. Thank you very much for supporting us in this project. We could not do this without you. And a couple announcements. I posted an hour-long video of me coloring in Adobe Photoshop CS4, sharing some techniques that I picked up over the last several months on how to do some coloring techniques without using the BPelt plugin, without using the pre-flatting plugin, and some ways to do color holds and flatting that is more expedient if you have to do it all by hand. Also, I have a Facebook page now. I decided that it's time for me to be a little bit more active on Facebook, and I'm getting friended by people that I don't know personally, and it's getting a little strange just because I've got students on my Facebook now, and I've got art and story listeners and other and people from high school 20 years ago who are friending me on Facebook. And I thought, well, it's time to privatize my feed, my regular Facebook feed, and make it more of a vehicle for me to communicate with my students in a safe manner. So time to move my public stuff to a Facebook page. So you can get to that at Facebook, well, Facebook.com, of course. But also I posted it in my Twitter feed. It's Jersey on the Twitters. So you can get the link there. And as soon as I have enough people following me there that I can actually get a username, I'll have a Facebook.com/such-and-such. So, but I think you can find it just by doing going to Facebook and looking in the search box and just look for Jersey Droz, and there'll be a page, Jersey Droz Artist. So I will be back soon with another Thunder Punch Daily. And until then, remember, everybody,
being the most powerful man in the universe isn't all that makes He-Man such a great hero. Being strong is fine, but there's something even better. In today's story, He-Man used something even more powerful than his muscles to beat Skeletor. You know what it was? If you said his brain, you were right. And just like a muscle, your brain is something you can develop to give yourself great power.